that kind of scared me a little bit more in terms of hiring for it. It wasn't like just like another engineer or a salesperson, which I've hired for in the past. So I didn't really know what to expect.
One characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. It was grit.
All right, just hit record.
Sweet, what's going on?
All right, we are back after a long hiatus. I feel like I say that more often than I should, but here we are.
Yes, yes. Can you hear me, by the way?
I sure can.
I don't know, for a second there, I said a couple of things and you didn't answer. I wasn't sure if you could hear me. Yeah, I'm actually...
At the beginning, I could.
So you're currently in the office right now, and I am also in the office, but in a different room.
We're doing a remote local hybrid recording. I didn't set up, since we moved back in, I haven't brought back in the stuff to actually do a local recording. So we've been using Squadcast, but since we're in a small room, it's kind of echoey. So Lannan went to a different room, but we're actually
also
in the same building.
Yeah. Well, you told me, you said we should look in other directions so that our audio doesn't like play over, like get too loud on the other person's mic, which I felt would be more awkward than just going to another room. So I just went to another room. So anyways, so it's been a while.
Yeah. So I guess part of why it's been a while is we both took some vacation, which was good. Also a nice time of year to do it because it's like not the peak summer travel times, but so that's been nice.
I have a baby coming in 2 months. So like I basically had to get my vacation in now versus later in the summer. So I guess the last time we recorded, I think was towards the end of April, I think. And, you know, today it's June 3rd. So it's been a while. But yeah, like late or early May, I went on a vacation. And then mid-May, I went on another vacation. So I've just been like going on tons of vacations. And we added a new employee at the beginning of May, I think. And like he starts and I'm like on two vacations. So he's like got this idea of me as someone that just goes on vacation, doesn't work. Yeah. Like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
But yeah, the vacation.
But that was the timing of that was also great because of the hire, yes. Like the vacations, yes, with the hire.
Yeah. I was a little scared. I mean, I think we're going to talk about this a little bit on the episode, but yeah, I was definitely kind of a little bit worried that like we've been adding a decent amount of customers lately. So that mixed with hiring somebody new and, you know, going on vacation and just being like, oh my gosh, like, is everything going to be okay? Am I going to have to basically not be on vacation while I'm here? But, you know, how much work am I going to have to do? And as it turns out, I did not have to really do much, which was very, I don't know, I'm not sure the right emotion, but it just was like very relaxing.
Reassuring.
Yeah, well, that like basically what we've been doing and sort of like our strategy around hiring has been like, I mean, I think we're right. And it's difficult to, I mean, everyone knows this, but it's hard to like give up some of the things that you're doing and just knowing that maybe somebody else, especially someone new, is not going to do as good a job as you. Like, there's just no one could do that, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. I've been doing this for, you know, we've been at this for 4 years, like, there's no way that someone that steps in like a couple weeks ago is going to be able to, you know, do whatever that is as good as you yet. So you just have these fears of letting things go, basically. And I definitely had those. So it was very reassuring to just not have to, like, basically things were just handled and, you know, everything was good. But yeah, we can talk about that a little bit in this conversation. I don't know if you had anything else that you wanted to jump into.
No, we can just start there.
Cool. Well, yeah. So one of the things that we've been, I mean, we're constantly, as we grow, we're trying to figure out, you know, how to start, you know, delegating things either to the people that are currently employed here or, you know, if it makes sense, hiring, you know, for other roles that can kind of solve those problems for us. So one of the big things, I guess, over the past, I don't know, 3 months or so that we've been thinking about is hiring somebody to basically take a lot of the things that I've been doing on the customer side off of my plate so that I could, you know, focus on other things, specifically sales and like outbound sales. So right now I've been trying to cover, I mean, you and I like we're doing all the business related stuff, you know, like back office stuff. So like we're doing, you know, taxes, accounting, payroll, you know, I don't know what else there is, but all that kind of stuff. So that like we're already doing that. And then like just in terms of like kind of the bigger roles, we both will do some customer stuff, but I do a lot of that and working with our, you know, some of the client success team on those things. So, you know, we were talking like support and dealing with like issues and whether it is an issue or not and all that kind of stuff. As we grow our customers, obviously that starts to ramp up more. But also like things like collections, things like upgrades with current customers. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. And I was doing all that, but then also managing all the leads that were coming in. So all of our inbound leads, you know, jumping on demos, taking those prospective customers through trials and that whole sales process, negotiations, all that kind of stuff, contracts. And then like once they become a customer, everything else that has to do with them being a customer. So the customer stuff was taking a lot of my time to the point where I barely had time to do anything on the sales side, let alone even thinking about going outbound and trying to do a little bit more of that. So I think we both, I don't even know if we talked about this on the last podcast, if this ever came up of like thinking about maybe hiring somebody for this, but I guess, yeah, like a month ago, we hired somebody for this role to kind of, again, like focus on all customer related operations. So everything from support to like client issues, customer feedback, collections, upgrades, all that kind of stuff, so that I could like completely focus on sales. And yeah, so we've basically gotten through the first month of that, and it's been better than I expected, actually. Not like based on the person, but just like anybody that we'd hire for that role. Like I was just like, oh man, this is going to take, you know, months and months for them to get ramped up on all the little, you know, edge cases and things that we have with every customer. You know, it's happened much faster than expected. And like, I've been able to step out much more than I thought I would be able to much sooner. And it's just, I think the like going to the beach and like seeing that things were taken care of and everything, you know, the business didn't like blow up when I was gone and I didn't have to get involved was surprising to me. And also, but also just like reassuring. I felt relief. Like it was just like, it was an awesome feeling. So that has been going amazing. I don't know if you've noticed any differences like day to day or just like whatever.
Yeah, totally. And I think we touched on this a little bit on the last episode about like maybe we had just started this or just made the hire, I think. But that's what happens when you miss a bunch of weeks where you don't record. But yeah, even like in terms of like, so you were doing a lot of this work, but then because you're trying to do other things, like you're not taking, like there's, I don't know, analysis of the work itself or like, how can we make this process better? Or what pieces of this can we like automate or move to different areas? Or like, how can we make this, just make things better product-wise, process-wise, whatever. It's hard to like take that. If you don't have someone who like, that's their sole focus, it's hard to leave space for that or find room to spend that time to do those things. And so I think that's been a big benefit as well. Like already is just having someone who's more like has more room or is more focused, I guess, on those things so that we can take those next layers off, because then that makes the process overall better. And then everyone is doing better. So yeah, it's been really good. And I think in some ways going like you having a trip was a good, I was just thinking that as you were talking, like, it's almost good to force like test sort of like a quality assurance for like the system of the system being our business. Like, okay, you need, cause otherwise it's like, if you don't have any, let's say it's, I don't know, dead of winter and you have nothing going on, it's too easy to like keep handholding or kind of like your fears kind of driving you to like keep doing stuff or whatever. It's almost like, hey, I'm going to step out for a minute and just like, it's like, let the kid ride the bike and see if they fall type of thing. And I think, yeah, I feel like it's been a really good experience. And like good part of it's like, this is like also a new role. I think that's a lot of it too. It's not like we're hiring like a third engineer, fourth engineer, fifth engineer. Like it's, we're hiring A for the first time for kind of some of these things. And also it's the role itself is kind of uniquely like cobbled together. So it's like, there's, it's a less defined, like, this is what you'll be doing every day off the bat. So I think it leaves a lot of room for like uncertainty. But, and I also feel like when you hire any sort of hire, it's like you swing back, at least for me, I swing back and forth between like probably like intense optimism. And then that makes me feel, it feel like at first it's like, this will be amazing. Like, here's all the things we'll be able to do. And then like that feeling kind of like scares you into pessimism or fear that like, or will it be terrible and everything will be awful and it'll take forever. And then I think you basically just like swing back and forth between those like extremes when the reality is going to be somewhere in the middle and everything will be probably better or everything will be fine. And you just have to like talk yourself off of those emotional roller coaster.
Totally. Yeah. And I guess this role, like, I didn't really think about that, but, and maybe some people, I don't know, it is kind of a, I guess it's kind of a product role too, in a way, because a lot of the stuff, like, and maybe most, like, I would typically say that this role is like a customer, like a customer success role, but I think we specifically take like product feedback more seriously than the next, you know, than most people do, and sort of, and how, like, how we approach it, to the point where like every conversation we're like trying to dig for more and find out more information so that we can then both have like the product feedback from the customer, but also some like internal things that we can do to speed things up. So it's like, I don't know, this role is like, it's a little bit more than just what I would say, like customer operations or customer success or whatever. Like, it's got a little bit more of a product research component to it. So it's kind of a hybrid role, I guess you could say. Anyways, I mean, it's a hard role to hire for, because it's not like a really, because it's a hybrid role, that kind of scared me a little bit more in terms of hiring for it. Because it wasn't, yeah, totally. Like you said, it wasn't like just like another engineer or another, you know, a salesperson, which I've hired for in the past. So I didn't really know what to expect, but it's gone great. And they've been awesome. My ability to just like give stuff up has been pretty seamless, I feel like, or like pass, I guess, like transition things more so than I thought it would be. So yeah, I mean, it's been great. And I guess like we've done, maybe might be good to talk about like, I guess, how we've kind of done that. So we, I mean,
before you do that, I was going to say, on the like product feedback kind of thing, thread you were pulling there, like, I can't remember. I think it was like a Heroku talk at some conference I went to a long time ago, but they said, I'll never forget this quote. It was, customer support is the pain sensor of the organization, something like that. And I think that's like, that's kind of something I hold pretty dearly, is, I guess, as you grow, it's easy. Like, when it's just you and you're doing everything, you're going to feel all the pains and all the edges and all the terrible things. And that's going to drive you to try to like, or hopefully drive you to, or at least give you the knowledge you need to improve those things. And the more you insulate yourself from, like, the more layers you put between you and the customers and like those pain points, the easier it is to become out of touch with those things. Like, you're dulling the pain, basically. And so I think that's always something like to be aware of. And that's why hearing from people who work directly on those projects or with the customers or on support inboxes or whatever it is, like, is pretty essential. Like, some people think of support as like sort of this, you know, necessary evil where they just try to close tickets and everything. And I know we've talked about this before many times, but I feel like there's a wealth of opportunity inside of the knowledge of the people who are dealing with all these issues and doing all these processes all the time, because all of those things can be made better. And
right.
Sometimes, and it can be easy for the people who are doing it every day to like, well, first of all, they probably don't have the time. In some cases, might not have the authority to like make choices that make life better. And they also may not have the skills if some of those things are like, I don't know, software related changes. So it's pretty essential to like make that a first class citizen, is like, you need your input about your day to day and the customer's experience and all that is like pretty key to us making this a better place. Like, we can't just like sit in a room and like make decisions and hope that, and just assume that they're going to make everything better. So,
right. Yeah. And I think that this person, like, part of the reason they were also like excited about this role is because it included that kind of stuff, right? Like, this isn't your typical like, you know, customer success manager role. Like this is, it's a lot more than that, or at least it's the view of what we believe that role is, which I think is different than a lot of companies, maybe because of how they think about it, or just by default because they're way bigger and they have like, you know, maybe they can dice it up a little bit different. But yeah, so anyways, that put, we're now 9 people. I don't know if you thought about that.
No, is that right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. So we have now 6 people on like what I would say is kind of the customer success, customer operation side of the business, or the customer side, whatever. And then 2 founders and 1 engineer. So that's 9.
That's wild.
It's pretty,
I mean, that's, it's
crazy.
It's like, obviously year to year will change. Oh, I guess another thing I was going to say about this customer operation stuff, or like the feedback stuff in general too, is like, because we're sort of also expanding, I know we hit on this last episode, we're expanding, or kind of we're in a period of like exploration in terms of what other services we can provide to our customers. And so that's where the product stuff comes in big time as well. Like,
yeah,
now your support team is not just answering questions about like, what button do I click to do X, right? They're actually like doing exploration around new service work or processes and trying to like nail down workflows. And so it very much is like a product discovery type of role. But
yep.
Anyway, yeah, that's crazy. We're almost to 10 people.
Yeah. I think we've kind of, like, I guess we've kind of hired ahead of, like, this is the first time that we've done this in like the entire timeline of the company, which is hire slightly ahead of like where we project. Like it's more of a, this is the projected growth over the next 3 to 6 months. We look at it more from that perspective if we're hiring, versus like a lot, I think a lot of companies, bigger companies or companies that raise money, will think longer term than that, and they'll hire ahead of things, you know, like where are we going to be, or where are we going to need to be for like a year from now? Let's start hiring that now because we can, because we have all this cash and, you know, whatever. We don't really do that, but I think this, like, we've kind of started to hire, we just have more consistency, especially coming out of the pandemic and starting to see that consistency come back in terms of revenue growth, that, you know, you start to feel the pains and you're like, okay, let's just get ahead of this, because it's definitely like, we're definitely going to need these, you know, hires 3 to 6 months from now. So we might as well just like get after it now.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's like the first time we've kind of started to hire a little bit ahead of things. And so, but yeah, I mean, it's been awesome so far. Like you said, a lot of this is like product exploration. We've got a bunch, I think we talked about this on the last podcast, but we've kind of found like a new potential product direction for ad reform. And we've brought on over $100,000 in ARR in that direction for that use case in the past, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months, something like, I think 2 months, like a very short amount of time. A lot of the, like, we're really like deep in that, you know, first couple months with those customers and trying to make sure that we, you know, first of all, like that we are, you know, doing what they need. And then like for the things that, you know, finding edge cases, trying to figure out what those are, you know, collecting a lot of feedback, really like just getting integrated into their use case and their processes and all that kind of stuff. And then the next phase will be more on you and, you know, on the engineering side to basically figure out how to, you know, build for some of those gaps or those edge cases and just, you know, iterate on this specific product and service. And so like we're kind of deep in that mode right now.
Yeah. It's always fun getting into it. And then I'm sort of like on the way down in the deep dive into the world, you're like, oh, there's so many things. And then as you're sort of like, okay, we need to assess what's here and like get back to the surface and try to like prioritize what to do. Like first you got to explore, see what all is down there, and then sort of come back up and like, okay, what should we do next? So we're sort of getting to that point where we're going to have to like make some calls around how to try stuff and how to carve it up into different projects. So that'll be fun.
Well, I feel like now we finally have, or we were getting to that point where we had time to start doing this again. I feel like we did this a lot in the beginning of the company because we didn't have any customers and we had all the time in the world, and I had all the time in the world. So like I could like get on the, you know, calls and like, you know, start to do this kind of stuff. But, you know, especially having like obviously the business grew, you start to, you know, you start spending a lot more time in customer support, like just like, and in, you know, sales, like through trials and all that, like you just don't have as much time on your hands to do a lot of that stuff. I mean, you still do it, but like you just don't have as much time to dedicate towards it. And then of course we had like another product and business that was taking up a lot of that time. So, you know, we just didn't have the time to be focused on this. And now like finally we've gotten that time. I mean, I haven't really thought about that, but like if we did not sell user feed when we did, I don't know that we would, you know, I just mentioned like we've got over $100,000 in new ARR specifically for this like new kind of use case and new type of company that we've sort of figured out a solution for. And I don't know that I would have had the time to like really care about that. And in fact, actually, I remember multiple times when people have reached out to us, like new leads inbound, that were asking for things kind of in this, I don't know for sure, but I think it was like the same thing. They were asking for kind of the same, it was the same use case. And I just said no. Like I just said, like, we don't do that. Because yeah. I didn't have the time to dig in. Like we didn't do that. It wasn't like, it wasn't a direction we were going. In fact, we had another business that we were just like pretty focused on. So like if you didn't fit the exact kind of use case that we really worked well for and where we knew that it would be a success for like for us and for them, then we just kind of like, sorry, like we had to move on because we were just so focused on other things. But yeah, I wouldn't have had, like if we didn't sell that business, I don't think we would have these customers right now, because I just would have said no and moved on.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point because I was just thinking about how part of that calculation is like so many things when you're trying to do a standardized business. So like SaaS is obviously like, if it's pure software, like it's, there's obviously tiers or features or whatever, but it's like the whole idea is to get a relatively set thing and offer it to a bunch of different people who they can all use the same thing and maybe in different ways. But it's like the thing itself is just like a set of standards.
Right.
If I feel like so many of the challenges with sales or like customer acquisition with SaaS or with productized services or any sort of standardized thing is trying to assess if an individual's needs, like, can you generalize an individual account's needs in a way that will appeal to multiple enough people that justify the effort? And that analysis alone is its own project. And like, if you're spread across two products already, it's like, you don't even have, not only do you, a one-off email just kind of reads as like a one-off need on its face, and then you don't have the time to even step back and try to like connect dots to see what the generalized version of that would be and how it might cut across enough people to make sense to do it. So yeah, it's definitely been nice having that like extra appetite to say, hey, let's look, we've gotten a couple things about this. Let's try it, see what happens, and then try to find the commonalities. You kind of, sometimes you have to like commit to doing it a couple times before you can find those, the generalized version. So I think that's, yeah, it's a good way to think about it.
I think you have enough time to like focus, like you can do that like across one business, right? Like you have the time to do that across one business. So whether that's on a new idea for kind of a new product or business, like we did with user feed, or whether that's like within the current business you already have in the current product, like kind of finding new use cases, new avenues, maybe kind of like potentially new, I guess, like industries that you could sell to, or like roles within a business or something like that. Like you only have like time and room for and focus for one. So you kind of have to like pick. So like when we dropped user feed, or drop's a bad word, I mean, sold user feed, you know, at that point now we have time to like do that same thing, but just like on ad reform, which was actually like, I mean, that was like the whole point of selling it really was like, let's get focused back to like really, focus our time and energy on product development for ad reform.
Which, yeah, like see what we're missing.
see what we're missing, which
give us room to like explore. Yeah, totally.
Already,
there's also things that we're doing that we just knew that we just never did, but like we always knew we needed to. So, I mean, it's good to do all those different types of things.
Yep. So yeah, that's been, it seems like, looking back on our decision to sell user feed, because like we could have kept going, right? And we could have, it would have kept growing. But again, like our like theory on it was kind of like every minute that we spend on user feed is just not going to put out the same ROI that ad reform has. And I think now it's like very clear that that was the right decision for us. You know, we're already like, it's already paying off even like this quickly. So I haven't
we just got fortunate to like get a quick, we're getting quick feedback on our decision, which is nice. Positive feedback.
Totally. So yeah, so I guess, I've been doing more sales over the past really 2 weeks, I think. So I've been, now that like we have the team in place to really manage all the customers and deal with all the customer operations, I've been like digging through different like tools that we can use to do a little bit more outbound, emailing. And so like I've tried out a few different tools and like, gotten like quotes on different things. I'm currently using MixMax. So it's like, I wanted to use something that was like pretty closely integrated with at least, one of the tools that we already are using. So one of the tools that we use is Gmail, obviously. So like MixMax is, there's a big group of, I guess, products out there that are, I don't know exactly what they're called, but it's kind of like cadence or sequence tools. So like to be able to send sales emails, not like MailChimp or something, but like more sales related and more just letting you like personalize emails in a more efficient way and set up like sort of like, sequences of emails after that that are more automated. So anyways, I've been, there's tools like SalesLoft and Outreach.io and Reply.io. But anyways, I've been using MixMax, which is built on top of Gmail. So yeah, I've just basically been setting up a few different sequences that are more industry specific. Now that we've kind of like started to go down a few different paths from an industry perspective, or like a category of company, like I don't know that it's industry, but like a category of company within our like larger.
It's a niche within a niche.
A niche within a niche. Yeah, I basically created a sequence for each of those just to be a little bit more personalized, and been trying some different things out on the copy side. And my approach has always been to keep sales emails relatively kind of short and sweet, because people don't want to read sales emails typically. So you might as well just keep it short and get to the point. I don't do a lot of the like, oh, you're like, oh, you went to UGA. Oh, cool. Go Dogs. Like, here we go. I don't do a lot of that stuff. I think people just want to kind of get to the point, and like they either care about what you're doing or they don't. And so like you might as well just get to the point quickly. So yeah, so that's kind of the approach that I take. And then any follow-up emails after that are always like very short, like literally like one sentence or maybe two, where the whole point of that email is just to like show up as a reply to the first one, to kind of like be like, oh, like in somebody's inbox, it's like, am I in this conversation? When it shows up the first time, it's a new email. But when it shows up a second time as a reply, it kind of makes you like, you're not quite sure if you are in a conversation with them or not. So you might look at it. It like gets you to look at it. And then the email is meant to be like, just to get you to look back at the first email to see like the content of it. So it's just like very short and sweet to get you to look back at that, kind of like a poke or something. So anyways, I have been sending those, and it's been very, very good. Like
the early returns are positive.
Very positive. So, I mean, I haven't sent that many emails. You know, this has been like, it's not, all my time has not been spent on this. Like it's been a lot more of my time, but still like a smaller segment. So I'd have to look at the data, but we're talking like, I don't know, 100 emails or something. And maybe like of those emails, it's like half of those are like, you know, maybe it's like 50 companies or something, or like 50 like net new sequences. And I've gotten, I think like six meetings set up off of that. So pretty minimal time spent. Like once I picked, you know, a product to use and like, you know, wrote, like obviously there's some upfront in terms of like coming up with your messaging and things like that. So there's some upfront work, but like from there, in terms of just like putting, you know, lists together, finding emails, putting them into the cadences, like very little effort there. And, you know, it's pretty good. I don't even know if it's that, like, it might be less. It might be like 30 companies or something like that, where I've gotten like six meetings off it. And I just had a call where I'm pretty certain, like, we're moving on to next steps and it's gonna like close. So already, like, within like 2 weeks, I'm already like closing a deal. And, you know, our average deal size is like 1200 a month. So I don't know if it'll be that, but like, I mean, that's amazing ROI in 2 weeks of doing this.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was thinking
it's
like,
only going to keep going from here. So
part of the value, or one big benefit of having addressing a smaller niche, is like, if you can figure out who to talk to, which is obviously a big question mark, is that like I was thinking about your copy, like what you were talking about, how you go about writing the copy for these emails.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it makes it a lot easier to just be like, here, like, if I have this right, like, you're someone who cares about this thing, so here's what we offer, or here's what we can do. Whereas if you're selling something, you know, and you're just blasting out emails to everyone on the planet about like your whatever marketing software for everyone on the planet, like, I can see why people start doing stuff like, you know, are you getting eaten by a hippo or whatever that thing is? Like, just trying to get people's attention, because like the actual message is kind of like, this thing is probably like a thing you already have that is almost the same and we're not that much different, but I'm trying to sell it to you. So here's a hippo picture or whatever.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, so, and
go ahead.
To be fair on that, like, there aren't really a lot of options for people out there. Like, it's basically like you either do like this thing that we help with, like you either do that yourself manually and you hate it. There's no one that loves it. So like, you know, immediately that they hate it. Like, you can assume that if they're doing that, right? Or they're using, you know, something to do it, or some company to just like outsource it or something. But there's not a lot of options here. Whereas like our last company, there's tons of competitors, super competitive market. And I mean, even with UserFeed, like, very competitive market, right? Like, a lot of people in the product feedback space. And so when you're reaching out, it is harder to, you know, it's a little bit more difficult in terms of like getting attention of people.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, that's what I mean. Because the message itself, like in our case, the existence of an email about this thing is like noteworthy, right? Like,
right.
Even if the email just says like, we have a thing, here it is. Whereas in those other markets where there's a lot more, there's a bigger market and therefore there's also a ton of competitors, the fact that you're getting an email about this is like a weekly occurrence. So somehow I have to differentiate my email from the one you got yesterday. And like, the products could be different in some way or maybe not, but you're not even going to get to that part because you already have a solution. So I just need to like wave something in your face to get you to pay attention to me.
Totally. I mean, so the more
it's really nice to like, yeah, then smaller the, I guess, if assuming your niche audience also translates to like fewer competitors, which is typically the case, then it makes the content of your email like more signal, I guess, and less noise.
Well, that's why, like, even if you're in a competitive market, I think that we did a pretty good job of this at Rigor, actually, as much as we could, even though like it's a very competitive market and almost everybody, like, it was an incumbent situation, right? So there's a difference between incumbent situation, competitive market, and like net new competitive market. Like, if you're in the ABM industry, like, oh, it's this new market. So like, most of the time people don't have a product yet, but they're probably getting hit up by every ABM company that exists, which is a lot of them now. And so that's different from like, okay, this has been around for like 20 years, you know, web performance monitoring market. And I know for sure that you're using like some kind of product in there, and I can almost assume which ones you're using. So that's like a different approach. But I think in any sort of like outbound sales approach, I think it's probably smart to try to like niche down your email messaging to be, or even like, you know, niche down like the sequences and the messaging within those sequences to like very specific audiences. So that could be role based. Like if you're reaching, if there's different roles that use your product and you want to like be very specific about it, that could be role based, or it could be like industry based. And then like the messaging should be sort of what kind of problems that specific industry has as it pertains to, you know, your space or your product, and like hitting on that, you're going to have a lot more success than just this like general, you know, hey, what's up? Go, you know, I see you went to UGA, go Dogs. Here's what we do at a high level. Like that's the email, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's like, the, that's what gets mistaken is like personalization is like, I put your first name in there in your alma mater or something like,
yep.
Yes. Technically that is a customization based on some attributes of me as your prospect, but that's not valuable to me really. Right. Like,
right.
I don't really care. I mean, I know that especially in the software landscape, if you're selling software to companies who are software companies or are aware of software, like modern companies, they know, like they know that that's just like scraped from somewhere. It's not like you've done some homework or anything. It doesn't impress me that my first name is in the cold email or my, you know, whatever school I went to. So yeah, the, obviously what you just described is a ton, is a lot more work relative to just fully automated cold outreach. But I think if you can, especially if you have a higher price point and you can justify that level of curation, I think it's much more powerful.
I mean, one of the most important things to cold, like any sort of cold outreach is like sort of the prep, the preparation that goes into it beforehand and like the research that you're doing so that you can like tailor these to be a little more specific to their problem set. But a lot of people confuse that with like, oh, I'm going to look on their LinkedIn and like see what college they went to and like mention something about that that they don't give a shit about, you know, like, I mean, that is prep. That's the wrong kind of prep. That's not going to get you, it's not going to help you. And they're not going to care about what you said about that. They might even think it's creepy that you're like doing that. What they would rather know is like, you know, that you know something, like you see that they're from a specific industry and based on your experience, you know, customers from that industry, like you can make assumptions about like the problems that they have that are specific to their industry and how your product or solution helps with that problem specific to that industry. And so you kind of have to like, you do your prep and then you make assumptions based on your experience and your knowledge of the industry about that, you know, their, you know, the prep that you did and like what industry they're in and all that kind of stuff. So like with us, it's, you know, if I know that they're in some specific industry, I know that all our customers that we have that are from that industry have this specific need because they have this specific, you know, problem that they hate dealing with and it costs them a ton of time. And so what I do is just reach out and I'm like, you know, a bunch of our customers that are in your industry have, you know, this very specific problem. And I'm assuming you probably do too. You know, here's how we solve it. And it's very simple, right? So I don't know. I get annoyed because I get the, you know, I get sales emails all the time and they suck. Like they're all terrible. And they all are trying to do that. They're either like zero personalization or the personalization is not the type that helps. So I don't know like who's teaching them how to do this stuff or where that, like it's just, I don't know. There's a weird, that's why sales, for all the people that get sales emails out there that hate them, like that's why they suck, because they're doing those two things or they're like doing nothing or they're doing a lot of prep, but they're not doing the right prep and they're not, like they just don't, I don't know if it's what they've been taught or they're so like earlier in their career that they don't know, they don't realize that people like don't care about that stuff, that they really just care about their problems being solved. And I don't know, it's probably a little bit of both, but.
Well, and it's related to like another conversation we hit on a lot, which is metrics. So kind of actually you and I were just discussing about this, like looking into, you know, deal pipelines and seeing conversion rates from lead inbound leads or out, or even like, you know, whether they're sourced from cold outreach or inbound, and then how they, the life cycle of them through the process, the sales process. But related is like you were talking about, you know, a lot of the email related or cold outreach related metrics, which can be like emails sent. And I think that's where it's like measuring that stuff is important, because you can get a sense of like, you know, if I send this many emails, let's say over the course of 6 to 12 months, I can measure like how many emails I'm sending per week, and then how many of those are converting, and you start to understand more about the health or like the normal levels of your process, and then start to make tweaks and measure how that might be changing those numbers. But I think it also is, it can be easy to get caught up in like, especially if you're an early state, like an entry level salesperson who's sending a bunch of emails as your, basically as your job. Like if you have to show everyone how many emails you sent, then you're going to, it's kind of disincentivizing you to like curate those messages, like we were just saying, like which could have a better impact, a bigger impact on your success rate. But if you're not sending enough messages and you miss on that experimentation, like you might get fired. So it's a weird tension. I mean, obviously we don't have to worry about that where we are, and we're thinking about that kind of stuff, but it's like
I might get fired
on a sales team. Yeah. If you don't send 1,000 emails a week, but it's like, okay, you're kind of accidentally telling me to just focus on volume instead of quality. And I think, you know,
yeah,
I can,
well, you're wasting at bats. Like we used to have, you know, we had a lot of, at Rigor, we had a lot of BDRs, you know, more than 10. I don't remember how many we got up to, but you know, it was a lot. Like you could see activity level. So like one of the metrics was activity level, which is basically just like emails or calls. But when you look at that, and then you look at like how many, like, of course the metric is like, how many meetings did you set up? You would see some people that set up, they hit quota or whatever, like they set up like 23 meetings, but they had to send like, you know, 3 times as many emails as another person that also hit quota. And so, which I think we, like a lot of companies would just kind of, you know, okay, great. Like they both hit quota, like, all right, on to the next month. But that's like, that's 3 times as many wasted at bats, basically. There's only so many customers, you know, there's not unlimited companies and people that work at those companies out there, prospects, basically. Like it's finite and you need to treat it that way and like be a little bit more targeted. And that's where all the, that's like kind of what all these ABM companies are hitting on, which is like be much more targeted at, you know, at least some subset of your customers, because there's only so many of these larger customers. And like, if you waste your bats on these, like you really only get one chance. Cause once people are like, this person, like get this person away from me, like
at least for some period of time, like you're going to
leave the company. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, well, yeah, it'll be good. I mean, we can report back over time as we do this more and like see what the conversion rates actually look like and kind of what, where the tooling lands and all that stuff. We can kind of share more about that as we go.
Yeah. I'm trying to get more, now that I have more time to focus on sales, I'm realizing how much I have like lost, or like, what's the, like how many steps I've lost here in the past few years. Well, I guess, I don't know if that's like for people listening that aren't in America, like, what's the phrase? It's like
I don't know.
You've lost like a
muscle
step
atrophy
or two.
A little bit.
Right? Yeah, like I don't know if that's like
you haven't exercised this muscle and it's sort of diminished now.
Yeah, and we used to, in our previous company, we were kind of like, we were very plugged into the startup community in Atlanta and even like somewhat beyond. We were at this big, like there's this big startup hub in Atlanta that's, I think it's one of the biggest in the country, just in terms of like how many startups are working out of that building. And so you're around a lot of different startups, and obviously those startups are growing and hiring salespeople. So you're around a lot of salespeople and you're sort of sharing ideas and tools that you're using and different techniques and messaging, like copy techniques. And there's just a lot of like shared knowledge, which I guess you just sort of take for granted. And like now that I've been out of the game essentially for a few years and literally like out of touch with a lot of people, because we're not at that place anymore. And also just generally because, you know, like the pandemic and because no one is, I found myself like really wanting to get a little bit more, just more plugged in. So I've been trying to, I don't know if I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Like if I'm going to like literally go over to ATV a little bit more, like once a month or something, or if like I'll just try to get, you know, coffee with someone like on the sales side of like different, you know, people that I know every once in a while, like once a week or something. I'm not sure, but I'm trying to like actively do that a little bit more. And I've done it a little bit in the last couple of weeks, and I've scheduled some things with some different people, and I'm going to try to like keep that up a little bit more. But I definitely think there's something to like being in, no, that could be like a community online, right? It could be like a Slack group or something like that, which I've also like reached out, like what are the best like sales related, you know, communities out there. Not like, even if it's small, I don't care. Like if it, I just want something that's like legit.
Like, yeah, I think small is actually, I think it can get with Slack groups, especially our online communities, the bigger they get, I think the easier they are to ignore, because you're just like, you, like your presence there is kind of not important, right? So I think that's a good place to learn a lot of stuff, and you can like search for things and find, like there's probably been a lot of conversation around anything you could want to find out about, like looking for programming problems on Stack Overflow or something, right? Like most people aren't helping by answering questions. They're just looking and learning and copying and pasting. So I think it can be great for that. But if you're actually like trying to have a community that you're a part of, I think it's a little bit smaller is better, because like you're missing that, your presence is valuable. Like you're an additive thing. So I don't know. I guess that's where mastermind type things come in. But
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, if anybody knows of anything out there that they've gotten a lot of use out of like the community or whatever, I'm definitely open to doing something like more like online. But I definitely think there's something to like just being generally around it. Like for Rig, like when we were at Rigor, we were all like, you know, a bunch of startups on the same floor. I even like Sales Loft, which is like one of the bigger sales tech companies out there now. But at the time, I mean, it was, I guess there were like a couple people, I guess just the founders at first, but like as they grew, like we were right next to them. And so you're seeing kind of like some of the stuff that they're running into, or that, you know, like techniques and things that they're trying that may be working or not working. And so you kind of like, you know, you try some of those things out, you talk to those people at the coffee shop downstairs. Like it just sort of like happens. Like it's not like, I don't know, like some of these communities are a little bit more forced, I guess. It's like, you gotta like, I don't have time to like sit in there and like pay attention to all the conversations that are going on and like interact. I just kind of want to, like, you could sort of want that like water cooler. Like, no, I just walked, I'm taking a break. I like walk down to the coffee shop. I see someone, I like sit there for a second, like chat with them. Like, oh, you just sort of, it just happens. So I definitely miss that. I didn't miss it. Like I didn't care. Like when I was there at the time, I didn't notice it, but now that I haven't had it, I definitely miss that a little bit. So I'm trying to like artificially make that happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's artificial. Like I actually have a completely different take on this, shockingly. I know you're surprised. Because I feel like when we were there, I didn't do like whatever the sales pitch was for that, like I never actually experienced. And like you could chalk that up to me personally and how I engage with the world, like on one hand. But it's like the people that I had social interaction with were just the people I worked with. Like especially valuable social interaction, because they had full context as to what, like we could talk about like actual specific things at work that we could, you know, share ideas on and stuff. So like there was an aspect of that like working in person with those people and like getting coffee and taking breaks and stuff is something we don't have as a distributed team. But like I never was like wandering the halls, bumping into someone and having a meaningful like exchange personally. And like some of the like more contrived organized events that I would attend were like just that. They were the takeaway was like, this feels contrived and organized.
So basically the takeaway here is that Kyle was being a good employee and sitting at his desk and doing his work while Landon ran around wasting time hanging out with people around the office.
No, I just think the takeaway is like serendipity is a thing, but like I don't know, having a bunch of people in the same building doesn't,
it's not automatic.
Well, like seeing people you don't know walk around doesn't mean you're going to have, that's providing value to you in any way.
Right.
I think that's, right. So I think what you're doing is actually better. Like I would say being more intentional about who you choose to like engage with, like whether it's a mastermind or like a handful of people you randomly, you know, check in with quarterly and or get coffee with, or like that's more meaningful than like that's relationship building. That's actual, and those people start to learn, you learn about them, they learn about you, you know, you know each other's strengths and weaknesses and experiences to actually like get, have conversations that go places. Whereas if you have offices full of like companies that come and go over the course of months, right? Like a given company might not exist in 5 months or less. And so like you're seeing faces and then they're disappearing or they're moving to different companies. And it's just kind of like, it's a more shallow interaction, which isn't useless, but I just think it's,
I felt like it's useful. Yeah, I see what you mean. I felt like it got more shallow as time went on.
Because it got bigger. And that kind of goes back to my other thing. Like,
yeah,
at first it was just like, there were like five companies all literally in one giant room. Right. And then all the companies started to grow, and then more companies became like, as the building was rounded out, like more people, there were more tenants, and everyone kind of got their own private space. Cause that's like kind of helps you actually be productive in terms of what you're trying to do, but it takes away from that camaraderie because you're not connected as much. And there's just more people. So you're like, you know, on day one, you're like one of 20 people. So you're like a pretty important, like you're a face people will notice if it's missing. And then on, you know, day 100, there's like 1,000 people and no one really knows anybody. So,
yeah. Well, I also think this as like, you couldn't have possibly, like my wife was like doing the same stuff that I was doing at similar size companies. And so like literally at the same, they were like at the same, I mean, she worked for two companies that were both at that same building, but regardless, I think that also like that could have played into me. Like that's an easy way to talk to somebody about stuff because it's my wife and I'm going to talk to her about that stuff. But also like meeting different people, that made it easier too. I think one thing that's kind of hard is like, yeah, I could like, I can call people up now and I can get coffee with whoever I want. But like, I'm not necessarily meeting new people. It's, you know, I'm going to meet with people that I know that I trust their opinions on things and like want to hang out with and like meet up with, but I already know them. So I'm not really like, it kind of takes away like the opportunity, or at least as much, to like meet someone new for some reason, just kind of like run into like somebody new for some reason. I don't know. Like it's, yeah, that's where it gets like true. a little bit harder, but maybe, I would say
like how many people, like there's obviously more than zero, I think, but how many people that didn't work at your company do you actually keep in touch with that you met like roaming the halls or whatever? You know, like for me, that number is like maybe one or something. Like it's extremely small. And not that that's not like a measure of success of a building or a space or anything. It's more just like a comment on like,
yeah,
that as like a, like for me personally too, like I'm not someone who's going to have 500 best friends. That's just,
I mean,
my,
I,
it's not my thing.
Well, like, I mean, Topa Cowley, that was like, I met him like literally roaming the halls basically.
No, I mean, I would expect 1, 3, 5 maybe, but
well,
like my point being like, you don't, it's just in day-to-day life, it's like meeting new people is kind of hard, like regardless of, because meeting people is not hard, but it's like going beyond like a meeting of someone, like taking, you know, the next step from like, hey, I'm Kyle, whatever, to like, we see each other, like me and you meet up and get coffee or something. Like there's a lot of like weirdness in between that. Like that's a low conversion rate, I guess. Even with like,
it is slightly easier though, when you can just be like, hey, you want to like go get coffee downstairs? Like, cause you're in the same building. There's a coffee shop. You're just like, what's up? Let's just grab. I mean, it's the same thing as if you met someone one time and they also live in the same like neighborhood and you're like, hey, what's up? You want to like go get coffee or whatever. I mean, I think what we're trying to say here is that I need more friends.
No, but I hear what you're saying. Like it lowers the barrier. Like if you see them periodically, it lowers the like effort barrier of like, oh, I met you once or twice. And then if I just run into you, it's easy for me to be like, hey, you want to grab a cup of coffee? Instead of like what feels more formal and more like official if I have to like text you or something, right? I mean, I feel like Twitter DMs has become a version of this for me.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's the place where I've met. Twitter has been, I mean, I think like I could name a decent amount of people that I met that I still hang out with or keep in touch with that were not like at our company, that were at ATV, but they were in the other companies that were like, you know, near us or whatever, that I've, you know, I still hang out with, I still chat with and stuff. And then like I joined, like at one point I was doing that, I guess it was kind of like a mastermind thing at ATV.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still kind of keep in touch with some of those people. And then like one person I keep in touch with a lot and we hang out a lot, which has been good. But like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only other thing that I can think of where I've actually met up with people like from that interaction, like whether it's just like on Zoom or like in person or whatever, has been Twitter, basically. So, and which has been good. Or somebody that we brought on the podcast, which usually started on Twitter or something like that.
No, this is like, we're like sort of, this is like its own episode, I think. But like, I mean, we've even talked about, in, you know, over time, like even making like the Made with Grit sort of like umbrella into some sort of like having some community aspect of that. I think the challenge, like when I think about starting like an online community or any sort of community, is it's like what I want to do. Like the utopian version is that there's like this place and people come and like people from all over of all, you know, of all different backgrounds and all shapes and sizes and like whatever. And you can like, anyone can come and everyone learns from everybody. And like, that's kind of like the ideal, right? Is that it's just like, there's an address and everyone can go to it and hang out and get value and enjoy it and have fun and whatever. If you actually try that, it's like, obviously everyone knows it's like very hard to create a place like that, that people actually continue going to. And so then the reaction to that is kind of like, what I should do is just like get 5, 10, 20 people that I already know and like get them together periodically. I mean, sort of in a sort of mastermind potentially, or maybe less formal than that, and hang out with them, which sounds really nice in some other ways. But then you're sort of like, then the resiliency of the group is like based on specific people, which is kind of a downfall. And you're kind of limiting the diversity of the group because it's just like your bubble, which isn't necessarily a bad thing if the point is just to like hang out with your friends. But I don't know. I feel like that's a challenge of like, how do you meet all those needs in one place? It's kind of tricky. Like you said, like meeting people new, but also having, in order for that to work well, you kind of, like sometimes it helps to have like a, like when you go to an event, it's like sometimes it's nice to have like two or three people you already know because it gives you more of like a jumping off point. But if you just go with people you know, then like you might never talk to anyone new because it's just easier to talk to people you know. So I don't know.
Exactly.
It's an interesting, question, but
it's kind of like cold email, right? It's like you sort of already, like going into it, you know, like a lot of the emails are going to go unanswered or you're going to get rejected or like it's just, you know, you're not going to have like a positive interaction with, it's not going to go further. You kind of have to like know that going in, but like in order to like sort of get the ones, you know, get the few that like are positive interactions that end up like being a customer, like you sort of have to like, you kind of have to like go meet with, you got to meet a bunch of people in order to like find the ones that actually matter. So I feel like we're having a dating conversation kind of.
It's just relationships. I mean,
yeah.
And I would say all of this is all of
it's
this.
Like, I love I feel you, like man.
I've noticed that you've talked about this more recently, which I think is, it has to be, it seems like it must be in some way partly related to like just the pandemic too. Like, yeah. Because like our company environment is distributed and asynchronous and everything. And so like, it doesn't have a lot of that stuff built in, like in-person, serendipitous, whatever you want to say. Like that's kind of like purposely stripped out of the organization. And so it doesn't offer that, but like you said, you were part of that group for a bit and like you will pop into different like spaces or make a point to schedule things with people, whatever the case may be. And like all of that stopped last year for like 18 months or whatever it's been. So I feel like part of it too is like that secondary energy source just disappeared. And then now it's kind of just now coming back. And I think it feels like it's kind of like reminding you of what you've been missing, I guess.
Yeah, it's a combination of everything. It's definitely that. That's like the cherry on top. Well, it's just like, it's that. It's also like, I feel like we've all, you know, we've been like heads down, just like grinding away at this business for years now. And we're finally getting to the point where we can, like, we have a team in place and we can sort of like we can either like step back a little and kind of like be a little bit more strategic or like we can work on other things that we haven't had time to work on. And like, then you get into those things, you're like, holy shit, I don't know how to do this anymore. Cause I haven't,
yeah, that's true. That's
I haven't
true.
Done like, this in such a long time.
We have more like we've been able to give attention to areas that we weren't before is like exposing like, weaknesses. Oh, I need to learn more about this thing. Yeah. And like, how do I do that? Oh, I need to go talk to these people or read these books. Or
I just need to, like, I feel like I just need to get like plugged back in. Like I was once plugged in. I had more interactions going on, more relationships in the like SaaS or tech world. And now that's been both in terms of like being more focused for a long time on the business and the pandemic and not being, you know, our office is not in that, even close to that area anymore, where like most of the startups are in Atlanta. It's just like a combination of everything. So I just want to get like, it doesn't have to be to what it used to be, but like just like more than nothing basically and just get more plugged back in. And so anyways, I'm actively trying to like do more of that stuff.
Are there any good, I mean, this isn't a person, this is not a, like a social fulfillment, but are there any good like newsletter? I just feel like I'm thinking of development and product and stuff, and there's like so many newsletters and blogs and like,
yeah, I don't know,
different resources that some of which I, you know, tune into to keep up with like what's hot or whatever, what even within like a specific, like within Ruby as a language, like you can niche it down to that, or you can expand out. Like, are there any, I assume there would be some stuff around that, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that, no, the problem there is that there's so much like, and maybe this is the problem. I don't think it's probably as much of a problem on the engineering side or product side, but like there's so much bullshit in the sales and marketing world. Yeah, so sense. Much like yeah. fluff, so
like
much
you can't
like
separate
BS.
The like,
that's why like if you don't know the, like there's a lot of people that like when you're meeting a lot of people, you can kind of separate the like legit like sales and marketing people from like the bullshitters. And but only when you're like seeing a lot of like meeting a lot of people and stuff. So just like picking, you know, out of the haystack like some different like newsletters from people that, you know, you don't know like what they're, if they're legit or not. It's just kind of, it's kind of tough. But well, to be fair, I haven't really looked that much on the newsletter side.
Well,
there's a couple of people I follow that I like, they're legit and they're, the things that they say make sense based on my experience. And I kind of like follow some of the stuff that they do, but
well,
yeah,
part of why I'm asking is maybe you can be that guy or make a mail brew for it or something. Like since you're diving back in, it's like, maybe you can curate, like whether it's, I mean, that's why I like mail brew a lot. Cause it's like you said, maybe there's a few people you trust their takes on Twitter. You can put them in there, put a subreddit in there that you think is good, put a, like a RSS feed for a couple blogs. And like that becomes your own personal, like, these are the things I think are good, which is kind of cool.
Totally. It sucks because like it used to be, I could just like go to, I could, you know, at any time I wanted to do it, I could just be like, Tony, which is that's my wife's name. You know, I could just be like, what are you guys doing here? You know, I could just ask her. Now she's so, like her situation now is like so different from where we're at. Like could be, like it's like the furthest thing from where we're at or even where she used to be, because she's a, like a big publicly traded company where most of all the sales stuff are like these big enterprise deals and none of it is like net, like no one's going outbound. This is like, it's all sort of like farming basically instead of, you know.
Well, that's why there's something here. I mean, I know some listeners to this podcast have expressed interest in like sales related content. So maybe there's a, I mean, not that there's like a complete lack of discussion around sales for, you know, smaller, calm, bootstrapped, whatever the words you want to use are. But like maybe there's room for Landon's newsletter on the topic, or Landon, maybe some Notion resources or whatever. Like, cause I know, I mean, even like looking at tooling, right? It's like, well, part of our, we don't want to spend like $50 million on HubSpot and all the crap that they offer, because there's like, we have one or two people using this software. Like it just doesn't make sense for us to, like, if you have 1,000 people, then maybe you can like scale that. But it's like, it starts out at like 250 a month. I don't know, whatever
it's
was.
It's nuts.
And it's just like, even things like that, like people our size are probably all doing that analysis or yeah. in our space. So,
well, yeah,
just a thought.
That came up with Ty, where I was like, and Ty has been on the show before. You can go find his episode way back there somewhere. But like we were both, we were like, I thought HubSpot was supposed to be like the startup tool, the like inexpensive product in the space. And like, once you really get into the pricing of all that stuff, it's, I mean, it jumps up from like your startup price at like, you know, $50 a month to like $1,000 a month real fast if you want to do everything. So anyways, that's another topic that we've run into, but yeah, I mean, so it's been good. I don't know if I have, I made my first investment in a company, AKA Legalized Gambling. So in fact, in the guy I just mentioned, Ty and Hubert, who used to work with us, made my first investment in any company. I don't know how many I'm going to make, but so.
Not in any company, because we started a company, so.
Investments, two companies. Yeah.
In your company that you don't work for, I guess.
Yeah, first one that I don't work for, but yeah, excited about that. And we should try to get them both on. I'm assuming we'll never get Hubert on, but we should try to at least get Ty on again to like give us an update on everything that's going on. But they're doing awesome. And so maybe we'll talk about that in like a year on the podcast of like what that's like, all plays out. Cause it's definitely new for me for sure.
Well, and it'll be, maybe another two is like, we're kind of picking back up the sales process to see where it leads. And I know that's something he talked about on his episode. So that's another conversation that could
for sure
down the road.
For sure. Cool. Well, we're like, this might be a
way over. I was like, we'll do like a quick 30-minute chat. So here we are. But this is like two episodes. So whatevs.
All right. I guess I'll see you.
It's been a quiet month. So we'll catch up. We'll make up for it with a 2-hour episode.
I guess I'll walk over 5 steps and see you back in the office.
All right. See you in a minute.
See ya.
All right. Bye, guys.